In today's editions of the New York Times, the newspaper admitted that a number of stories it ran about Saddam Hussein's possession of biological, nuclear, and chemical weapons were, quote, not as rigorous as they should have been. An editor's note in today's front section of the paper also stated, we wish we had been more aggressive in re-examining the claims as new evidence emerged or failed to emerge. It went on to list a few of the stories in question. The message from the Times editors did not name any reporters, but critics have questioned reporting by correspondent Judith Miller, who reported on weapons of mass destruction in Iraq before the war and the search for them afterwards. If you have questions about this mea culpa, our phone number is 800-989-8255, our email address totn@npr.org. Joining us now from his office in St. Petersburg, Florida, is Robert Steele, the Nelson Pointer Scholar for Journalism Values at the Pointer Institute. And thanks very much for being with us today.
Hi, Neil.
After you look at this lengthy message in the Times today, what are they in fact acknowledging?
Well, the New York Times editors are holding themselves and their newspaper accountable. They're admitting that some of their coverage of the Iraq story, particularly stories related to the weapons of mass destruction issues, has been flawed. Some of the stories were not up to snuff. The editors are acknowledging that some of the stories about WMDs were not as well sourced, not as fair, not as accurate as they should have been. And the editors say in some cases that they, the editors, were not as vigilant and as vigorous as they needed to be, should have been, in how they brought oversight to the reporting on at least those parts of the Iraq coverage. And the editors are also acknowledging that they've been pretty pokey in admitting that they've had shortcomings.
Mm-hmm. One of the things, curiously, is that they say, you know, they had front page stories about the possibility of weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. But when later evidence emerged that put some of those conclusions into doubt, they tended to be on page A10 or A23, not the front page.
Balance is always a difficult issue when it comes to covering something as complex and contentious as military action and the government policies. And in this case, the New York Times is acknowledging that they didn't do as good a job as they should have and bringing some level of balance in there in terms of the allegations, in terms of the assumptions, in terms of what the wind-blowing messages were.
And interestingly, though, the mea culpa isn't on the front page. It's on page A10 and not on the editorial page either.
Well, that's right. I mean, partly they did that, I think, to connect it on the jump of the stories about Iraq. But I would have liked to have seen something up front with a little more weight indicating that they were on this day saying that they had not measured up to the degree that they know they should have measured up.
Let's talk about some of the conclusions. One of the things it said in the message is that the Times reporters may have relied too much on Iraqi exiles whose principal interest was the overthrow of Saddam Hussein, and that that wasn't questioned enough when they provided information, which was then enthusiastically confirmed by government sources.
Well, that's right. They do indicate that there wasn't enough skepticism in terms of the choice of sources and the rigorous challenging of sources. And this is not only a failure of reporters if they don't do that well, but it's a failure of the editors. There's a term that's used in journalism, increasingly so in this era, prosecutorial editing. And that is an obligation of editors to be prosecutors, respectful, fair challengers on a regular and rigorous basis of reporters and how they're going about reporting their stories, from whom they talk to what kind of documents they're using, to the framing of stories. And the editors in this particular case, by the admission of the top editors at the New York Times, didn't do as good as they should have.
We're speaking with Robert Steele of the Pointer Institute about today's extraordinary admissions in the New York Times about the shortcomings of its coverage of weapons of mass destruction issues in Iraq. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And again, the message did not mention any reporters in particular. You don't have to dig very hard to come up with the name of Judith Miller as the person who was principally involved in a lot of these stories.
Well, her name is not mentioned, as you're correct in stating in this particular situation, but there's clearly the implication in what the Times has written here that her work did not measure up on the scale that the top editors have now applied to the coverage. A number of the stories that they cite by topic and date are ones that she either wrote on her own or had a hand in. I happen to think she's a very good reporter. That doesn't mean she didn't have some shortcomings in covering this story, however, and the Times Times has acknowledged that, particularly in the sourcing matter of her heavy use of particular sources, and most likely Ahmad Chalabi, led her down a trail in which she created stories that didn't measure up, whether it was not measuring up in terms of the factual accuracy or the contextual authenticity, or whether they just weren't fair.
I think a couple of points the editors say, we and the government were taken in.
That's right. And journalists have the vulnerability to be taken in, whether it's by government officials or whether it's by powerful individuals who can exploit or use misinformation or disinformation. And it's an obligation of not only reporters but the editors to be appropriately skeptical to make sure that we are not taken in.
It also raises questions about the relationship between journalists and their newspapers and the government. What should be the relationship? Obviously, you go to the government to try to confirm some sorts of stories.
Certainly, we do that, and we must do that for a variety of reasons, including that verification factor and also fairness to those that we're writing about. But one of the linchpin principles of journalism is independence, an obligation to be very vigorous and rigorous in holding the powerful accountable, including government officials. And we also must make sure that we're not unduly influenced by those who have position or power. So while we use government officials as sources, and we use government officials as tipsters, we should make sure that we're not manipulated by them in a way that the end product of our work, the stories we publish or broadcast, is in some way diminished by those sources and their particular agendas.
Though we've mentioned the name of Judith Miller, obviously a lot of other Times reporters and editors were involved in the errors the newspaper acknowledged today. And it's also fair to point out that the New York Times is not the only newspaper in the country, not the only news organization in the country that may have had similar shortcomings. Anyway, let's get a caller on the line. Tom joins us on the line from St. Louis, Missouri.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I was actually just going to ask a question about that point, how your guest might think this would affect coverage in other news outlets, including other newspapers and television and radio, in that a lot of these stories were reported in very similar ways in virtually every media outlet you could get your hands on. And I was wondering if this comment by the Times editors might have an effect on other news outlets, and I'll take my answer off the air.
Thanks for the call, Tom. Bob Steele?
Thank you.
Well, it should raise the concerns of editors around the country. The Times, given its history, New York Times, given its history, its commitment, its expertise, is really a prominent beacon for other news organizations, not only across the U.S. but around the world. And many New York Times stories carry considerable weight, and they are picked up by newspapers around the country. They're picked up and referenced by the Associated Press and Reuters in many situations. So all editors should be appropriately journalistically skeptical when we pick something up from another organization, whether it's the New York Times or a less well-known paper or broadcast organization, and we should make sure that we are not passing along stories that would not meet our own test of high threshold credibility in terms of sourcing, in terms of high threshold credibility in terms of the verification of information.
What time for one more call, perhaps. Jack in Northampton, Massachusetts. And Jack, if you could keep it quick.
Yeah, okay, I'll try. Basically, I was struck by the comment that the New York Times said that both we and the government were misled by this information. And I just sort of felt that that was giving some sort of excuse or cover to the government, you know, in trying to move the blame away. I'm not sure that they didn't know that the information was false, but it's sort of like editorializing and giving an opinion in something that they don't know. Well, I also would like to know why the reporter wasn't chastised for it.
Bob Steele?
I don't know the answer to the latter question. My guess is that internally there have been some pretty spirited conversations, including formal ones, between editors and reporters, and reporters should be held accountable. That said, I like what the New York Times has done here. They have publicly acknowledged their shortcomings, and they have very appropriately, in the last graph of their statement, said that we fully intend to continue aggressive reporting aimed at setting the record straight. And well, they should, and well, we should around the country as other journalists and observers of journalism hold the New York Times accountable.
Robert Steele, thanks very much.
My pleasure, Neil.
Bob Steele is the Nelson Poynter Scholar for Journalism Values and the Director of the Ethics Program at the Poynter Institute of Journalism. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.